Mark Robinson.
Hey, what's going on now? I'm on the road, man. I hope this is going to work.
It is working.
I'm on my way back from an event up in the mountains here in North Carolina. So we'll be talking on the – can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you. People in the chat watching the show, can you hear Mark okay? So, Mark, who's driving?
I got my driver here, my body man, John. He's driving for me.
Okay. Tell him not to hit any bumps.
All right. Yeah, he's a good driver, man. It's the first time he's drove for me. He's doing a great job.
All right. Now, are we on audio to where he can hear?
Yeah.
Hey, John. Good driving there. Hey, I got a thing for you, John. Never travel faster than your guardian angel can fly.
That's a good one. Yeah, I would like that.
Mark, unbelievable, man. I loved getting to know that you were coming back on the program because, man, you have skyrocketed it in the national arena, and it all started when you stood up to a local city council and stood up for the average person. Let's go back in time there, Mark, and tell people what happened.
Well, you know, they were trying to cancel the gun show down in Greensboro because of what had happened in Parkland and with the school shooting in Florida. And they decided that for some reason it'd be a good idea to punish all the citizens in North Carolina by taking away their gun show when they hadn't done anything. And so I went out there and basically just told them, no, we're not having this. And then when I did that, I was speaking up for all the citizens of North Carolina, whether they own guns or whether they plan on going to the gun show or not, because, you know, things like it never stops with things like that with governments. As soon as they finished trying to attack the gun show and they got off of that and found out they weren't going to be able to do that, they started in on the whole plastic straw issue. So it's just one thing after another. If you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. Mm-hmm. So in that instant, you know, we had to stand and put our foot down, and I was able to do that for thousands of people. It turns out millions of people. And it turned out very well. Started a quasi-movement. And I think it gave a great example of what one person could do. And I feel blessed that one person, I was able to be that one person that was used to do that.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever feel when you were giving that speech to the council that so many people would end up admiring and loving you for your outspoken critique and your stand against them?
I did not. I had no idea that all this would come from that. Would come from that speech. When I did it, it was completely off the cuff. It wasn't planned. And when I was done with it, I wasn't sure how it would be received. I knew that it was being recorded. It's always being recorded. But I had no idea it would get the reaction that it's gotten. I had no idea what it would do.
Now, that video, of course, is out there. It's in many places. People sharing that all over the place. So I really, really wouldn't know what the total amount is. But do you know, I have an estimated idea, how many views across
the The last time I counted, I came up with about 100 million views. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I came up with about 100 million views. There's one particular outlet on Facebook. It's 66. At last count was 66.7 million. There's one with 4.2 million, and there's one with, I think, right around 26 million hits, mm-hmm. 26 million views.
Wow, outstanding!
So it's about 100. It's about 100 million.
Now, obviously, of course, you didn't. You weren't able to monetize that, but I bet other people have been. But has anybody sent you anything from the Google for the views they're getting?
No, I haven't gotten any money.
Dang it!
I haven't gotten a dime for that speech online. I tell people all the time, man. I wish I just had like a if I just had 10 cents for every view, I'd be good to go. But no, I haven't gotten anything like that. I have no monetary value out of it.
Well, yeah, like I say, of course you didn't do it for that anyway. But man, now with that amount of views, you know, people worldwide are watching that, and I bet you've inspired so many people. And really, you're just standing up for what's right. You know, your heart came through there, and you know, the maxim that says, you know, one person can make a difference. You are that guy. You are the prime example of that truth. That one person standing up for what is right can make that kind of difference. Now, did that city council, did they vote up or down after your speech?
Well, the issue was dropped. It really was. It was simply dropped. They voted for a resolution to give part of the proceeds from the gun show to a group called Gun Stoppers, which is supposed to get illegal weapons off the street, goes to the police department. But as far as any effort to try to stop the gun show, they completely dropped that idea. They mm-hmm. completely forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened is they realized that the attention that we got from the speech, if they had continued to pursue, there would have been more people who would have showed up at the next meeting about it and made me more vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they would not have survived it. They would not, and I don't mean that literally. But politically, they would not have survived it, and neither would the Coliseum director. He would have been forced out of his job if he had canceled the gun show.
Mm-hmm. From that video, now do you work in the town of Guilford?
I live in Guilford County. Yes, I live in the city of Greensboro.
Okay, did you have a job there?
I did. I was working in Guilford County. I was working in High Point, which is in Guilford County.
Yeah.
I was working there at the time and going to school at UNCG at the time that mm-hmm. speech took place.
Yeah. What was the first thing that happened to you in the realm that you can look back at now and see it kind of move you down a different path? What was the first thing?
You mean after the speech, what was the first thing?
Yeah.
The very first thing that was just blew me away was when Fox News called and wanted me to come on. They called me and wanted me to come on. I went on Fox News 3 days. I was on Fox and Friends 3 days after the speech took place. I was on Fox and Friends.
Wow. And you don't have to tell me, but did they fly you out there?
Oh, no, I did it. I did it. I went to Winston-Salem. Mm-hmm. And did it via a satellite.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And then what kind of feedback did you get from that appearance on Fox?
Okay. So when I went into that meeting, my Facebook follow count was at about 15,000 because I had a pretty good following on Facebook before all this happened. But when I went in, it was at 15,000. As soon as I came out of that interview and turned my phone back on, my follow count had jumped up to 30,000.
Wow.
So and it's been growing exponentially ever since then, but yeah, that was what kind of propelled the speech even further on a national scale. More people sought out the speech and start looking for it and sharing it because they'd seen it on Fox News,
mm-hmm.
and that really propelled it across the nation even more, made it go even more viral.
Mm-hmm. So from there, okay, you got an interview on Fox. Then what happened?
The next big thing was I was contacted by the NRA, and I did a commercial for the NRA. And the commercial centered around the speech, and that commercial, I guess you would say it went viral, but it was very, very, very popular, and still is. It was a very, very popular very popular commercial. Their Freedom Safest Places ads, that was featured in that promotion, and it was, like I said, very, very popular ad, very popular.
Mm-hmm. Are you on the board of directors now of the NRA?
No, I'm not. I was nominated to be on the board of directors.
Okay.
For the NRA. Did not make the board, but since that time, since Indianapolis, I have been placed on another committee with the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on a couple of committees, and I'm still connected with them, still working with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many places have you, numerically, have you spoken, been asked to speak at?
I lost count. I lost count. I really have. I've spoken as far away as Las Vegas. That's Las Vegas is as far as I've been to the West so far. Got some things coming up that in California, I believe, later this year. But Las Vegas is as far as I've been West. And the farthest I've been east of where I am is Nuremberg, Germany.
Wow. Now, yes. Now, what happened over there?
The NSSF, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, I was honored to be the keynote speaker at their pack reception at SHOT Show this past January. While there, there was members of their sister organization, the international organization, which is the World Forum on Shooting Activities. They saw me while I was there. They found out about my story. They decided to give me an international award called the Dr. Vito Jinko Ambassador Award.
Wow.
They give it every year to somebody who's fighting for gun rights and things of that nature. And they flew me to Nuremberg, Germany to accept that award there. I stayed there for a week with those folks. I had a fantastic time.
Wow. Wow. That's so interesting. So at some point, you met the President of the United States.
I did. I was honored to meet the president this year at the NRA convention, National Convention. They gave me the honor of delivering the invocation at the opening of the ILA event, the Institute of Legislative Action, the big event they have there every year. The president was there. As soon as I finished delivering the invocation, they took us back to the back, and we were able to meet the president. Get a picture with him, and you see the picture there. I'm proud of that. Like I said, he's the very first president I've ever got to meet, and I certainly am glad it was him, because I consider him to be so far the best president of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to meet him? Is he this racist that CNN keeps telling us he is?
Yeah, that's the thing they want you to think, that orange man bad and racist. That's the only thing they want you to know about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is. When we met him, he's the most down-to-earth person ever. He was cordial when he greeted us. He was genuine. He shook our hands. He gave my wife a big hug. He gave her the pen that he signed my hat with. Yes, I got my hat, MAGA hat, signed by the president. he's a fantastic guy. Fantastic. He's a genuine person, a great person. And I would challenge anybody on that notion that he's a racist. The man is. I have never heard him say one racist thing. I've heard him say things that infuriate people on the left, but it's easy to infuriate those folks. Those people have feelings as soft as cotton balls.
Mark, where are you heading to right now?
I am headed home.
Okay.
I'm headed home from a little town up in the mountains called Marshall.
Okay.
I was there at an event up there.
Okay. Well, what time is it your time?
My time, it is 8:42.
Okay. See if John turned on the interior lights.
I got you.
Hey, there you go.
There you go. Can you see me now?
Yeah.
Yep. I noticed it was getting a little dark.
Man, this is awesome, man. Here you're driving down the road broadcasting live. Mark, that's just awesome, man.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yep.
But you are inspired. But let's get to something a little serious here, and I want your take on it. This shooting today in El Paso, from what I understand, is a armed citizen put a halt to it.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
I've not gotten all the details. I've got scant details because I've been in this event. I was trying to keep up with it while I was in the event. I've been peeping at it. He was captured. Not killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah, and I don't know anything about him or not. My interest in this was that somebody with a gun stopped a bad man with a gun, and isn't that
that's what happened. Now, I've heard one person say that. I have not heard that for sure, because what I've been seeing is on social media and a little bit on just scant news from the mainstream media about what happened. You can't really depend on them most of the time. But I did hear one person say that somebody stopped him. But I had not heard that confirmed. But that is a fact. That did happen.
Well, again, if that's the way it went down, you know, that bodes well for what you stood up about, and that is people need
Absolutely.
To be armed. This country is not getting any safer, and it won't get any safer. In fact, it'll get worse the more gun laws we have.
Exactly. And, you know, this, all these mass shootings are a symptom of a larger problem in this country that we have. You know, I tell people this all the time. One of the reasons why I'm running for lieutenant governor is because I want to bring back respect of law enforcement officers and respect of law and order. People don't understand. It's not about the guns. It's about people's lack of respect for law and order. We're losing respect for it across the board. People don't respect each other. They don't respect the rule of law anymore. You know, it used to be when a guy got depressed and mad, sad to say, he would go into his bedroom and maybe, you know, he would take his own life.
Right.
People are not doing that anymore. Now what people are doing is they're trying to make everybody pay for their misery. And it's a larger symptom of a common theme, which is a common problem, which is a lack of respect for life, number one, and a lack of respect for law and order, number two. Mm-hmm. And we've got to turn those things around. And it starts coming from the people at the highest parts of our government. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some of those people are right there on board with not respecting life and not backing up those that carry out law and order.
Mm-hmm. In the live chat going on, it says, Mark, you are spot on. Here's a question for you from our chat. It says, every time the Democrats start to debate, a shooting happens. Do you think today's shooting was planned?
I have no idea whether or not it was planned, but, you know, whether it was planned or not, it is, again, a symptom of a terrible issue. A terrible disease is going on in this country right now. Mm-hmm. And we have got to figure out a way to stop it. But we also got to understand this. The way to stop these shootings is not to disarm people. Mm-hmm. Because criminals will not be disarmed. You can take guns away from them all day long, but if they don't have guns, Timothy McVeigh didn't have a gun. The 9/11 hijackers didn't have guns. They were able to do major damage. A determined killer is going to kill. We need to fight crime is what we need to do. We need to take the handcuffs off the policemen and put them back where they go, which is on the criminals. Mm-hmm. Currently, we're doing the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. We're demonizing policemen, making victims out of criminals, and it's giving these criminals a carte blanche to go out and do things like these mm-hmm. shootings. Mm-hmm. We need to start fighting crime again.
Kevin emailed in and said, Mark, what's your favorite concealed carry weapon of protection and why?
Some people might not like this, but the Glock 19. I've got a Glock 19, fifth generation. Most reliable, most accurate, easiest to fire, easiest to operate, easiest to maintain. If it was good enough for the Navy SEALs, good enough for operators across this, mm-hmm. professional operators across this country, mm-hmm. it's good enough for me. Now, it's mm-hmm. not my favorite firearm, trust me. I don't want to fit those Glock things out there, but Glocks are ugly, folks. I like pretty guns, 44 Magnum. I got a 44 Magnum, 6.5-inch barrel. That's my favorite firearm right there. I just got a 50 caliber Desert Eagle AE stainless steel. A beautiful weapon. But when it comes to concealed carry, something that's going to be reliable, I'll go with that Glock all day long.
Mm. Mark, you, I think you nailed it on the head, what's going on, and the lack of respect. And, I don't want to just hammer on Obama, but it seemed like he coddled people that were disrespecting the police. And it seemed like it sort of grew from there. There were police assassinations. Yes. I remember in New York City, police were assassinated in their car. There were marches down the street saying, kill the pig. What do we want? We want dead cops. This was let go. This was winked at. This was literally encouraged by Hollywood. It's disgusting.
Right.
And then the kneeling, disrespecting the flag. And now we've got people licking ice cream. I saw some woman jump on some lettuce and was milling around in the lettuce. I mean, somebody on both sides got to say, we need respect in this country, but we can't get that. What is it going to take to start turning that ship around?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And I don't mind jumping up and down on top of Obama, even though he's out of office. I really don't mind jumping up and down on, because he was a horrible president. When those things were going on, he's the top guy, the most visible guy in government in the country. he should have been coming out with a strong stand against this violence against police officers and saying, hey, there may be some issues in places where we have to stand up against bad cops, but this type of behavior will not be tolerated. And we're going to punish people who do this to the fullest extent of the law. He did not do it. He mollycoddled the people who were pushing the agenda. He invited some of them to the White House. He gave them, he legitimized the movement. So, yeah, he's a horrible president. He's exactly where it started in earnest. And I put the blame squarely on his shoulders because he had the opportunity. Barack Obama had the opportunity to be the great uniter in this country. Even though he was a Democrat, he could have stood up for a lot of the right things in a lot of situations. He absolutely did not do it. He was the most divisive, most racist president that's ever sat in that seat in my lifetime. He was a poor commander-in-chief. He ruined our military. He disgraced our military when he was in command. And he denigrated our police officers and did not stand up behind them. So I firmly put the blame squarely on his shoulders to a large extent for what's going on now. I will say this. I think President Trump needs to be much more demonstrative in standing up for police officers because he's got to set that tone. But as far as I go and my campaign for lieutenant governor, and if I'm blessed to be able to become lieutenant governor, it's going to be something I'm going to shout from the rooftops because I'm going to tell you it's a very important issue because it's a deadly issue. It's a deadly doorstep issue. That if we allow these criminals to stay bold like they are, it's going to cost police officers their lives, and eventually it's going to start costing civilians their lives and their property.
Well, going on, talk about coddling criminals, that brings us right to the border. If you're an illegal immigrant, you cross our borders illegally, we hand you a check. We give you a car.
Ridiculous.
We give you a house. We give you more benefits than our veterans and our people on Social Security. This is like, that's a reward for breaking the laws. And let me tell you something, Mark, you know as well as I do, once they cross that border, that's not the first law they break. They break Social
right.
Security laws. They break contract laws. They say, are you American citizen? They check yes. They go to license branch. Are you American citizen? Yes. You know, and so that's just the start of the crime that happens there. And then you have these sanctuary cities. If you commit a crime in one of them and you're illegal, you get out for free. I don't know how many horror stories I've heard. I know you've seen them too. Say like somebody has raped somebody, stole the car 10 times, then arrested 40
right.
times. They get set out. No American citizen gets that kind of leniency.
Right. Right. Well, you know, let's say, first and foremost, let me say this. I'm tired of people on the news media and the people from the left call these people immigrants. These people are not immigrants. They're invaders. An immigrant is the classic example that we see at Ellis Island of people who came in on ships, stopped at the docks, filled out the papers, waved their American flags, were thankful to be here, were coming here to take advantage of the American dream. The people that we see now are not stopping at the gate. They're sneaking in by night, and they're not coming here to take advantage of the American dream. They're coming here to take advantage of the American taxpayer. To take every bit of money out of the coffers they can, coffers that they haven't put any money into, systems that they have not paid one dime into. They're coming here to bleed those systems dry. We need to stop these people at the gate, turn them around, and make them go back. And if they want to come back, they need to come back correctly. They need to be turned over to the proper authorities. They need to be adjudicated properly. It's not happening, and it needs to change. You were talking also about them breaking the law. It's simple. When you come to this country and you break the first law, it's not but a hop, skip, and a jump for you to continue to break the second law. We have a Democrat Secretary of State in here in North Carolina now that has given the notary public stamps, made notary publics of over 300 illegals. She has made them notary publics so that they can go around and give people stamps on IDs and everything else that they need to subvert the system. That's how deep this thing is running. It is really out of control. And we need to get some common sense back. And the common sense is, if you did not come here legally, you are a criminal. You need to be dealt with. Now, whether that means we need to deport you back to where you came from so you can come back legally, or just send you back and not allow you to come at all, It's in no question. You need to be dealt with. And you don't need to get away with breaking that crime. And sadly, a lot of these people on the left are letting these folks do it.
Well, that's true. You know, America, we have paid our dues. We went through, we fought the British, we fought world wars, we fought the Civil War, we fought Jim Crow laws, we fought for the Civil Rights Act. The people in South America remind me of Californians. They create liberal cities and policies that destroy those same policies. So Californians are leaving California, and they're going to North Carolina. They're coming here to Indianapolis, and they're saying, well, I'm glad to get out of California. But wait, you know what this town needs? This town needs library tranny hour. You know what this town needs? We need an immigrant shelter to house immigrants. You know what this town needs? We need to quit putting people away for rape and for drug charges. You know what this we need? They bring the same mentality with them where they go. The same mentality that destroys California. They're taking out these small towns all around, and they think they're doing good. Hey, I got a great idea. Let's just have tranny story hour in your little local library. You know, well, the people coming up from the border, they're bringing their mentality. When they come from crime and stuff, they have not paid their dues. Americans have paid their dues, and we have built this country with our sweat. Those countries are going to bring up the same mentality that destroyed. Hey, look at Venezuela. They voted socialism in, and now they're running for it. You think they're going to come up here and say, we don't want socialism, when you got Bernie Sanders saying socialism is great and you're going to have some free health care?
Right. I put it to people like this. If you want to stay what you were, you need to stay where you were. I mean, don't try to leave where you were that's giving you the condition that you love, and then go to somewhere else and try to change that place into what you left. Just stay where you are. If you're in a place crummy place like California that's got all these crazy liberal laws, and you like those laws, stay there and live those laws. Don't try to bring them somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And if you do go somewhere else, respect the people that are there, and don't try to bring your stupid ideas there to ruin their state or ruin their community. Mm-hmm. The same way yours is ruined, the one you're running away from. And it's much the same with the folks that are coming across the border. You know, everybody talks about Donald Trump being a racist. Everybody talks about America being unfair and America being racist and capitalism being bad. But I don't see one single solitary soul trying to break into Venezuela. Not one person. The reporters don't even want to go down there. So the proof is in the pudding. We need to change this narrative and get people to understand that this is the garden spot of the world. And we are welcoming, but we're only welcoming if you come to the door and ring the doorbell. If you want to come to the sneak to the back door and slip in the back window and all that, that's got to come to a screeching halt.
Well, there's a lot of people that are trying to pay their dues and come in the right way, and they've been in legal limbo for years and thousands of dollars. Why should anybody be allowed to cut in front of them? That's un-American. But talking about liberals destroying cities, you know, San Francisco, you can get a phone app, and you have to have this phone app, and it's for feces piles. Because they have allowed people to take dumps on the street, and so now you can look in your phone and find out where these dumps are. This is sick. How did America get to say where this is okay behavior?
I'm sad to say, we've been asleep at the wheel. We really have. I told somebody this earlier today. A lot of us Americans, for years, we abdicated our throne. And what I mean by that is this. We are supposed to be, we're the rightful masters of this government. We are the royalty in this government. The people are the royalty. And we need to take that back. We need to take our rightful place as masters of our government back. For far too long, we've allowed politicians to do whatever they want to do, trusting them and thinking that they would do the right thing. They have not. We need to, number one, we need to get involved. Number two, in getting involved, we need to get back into understanding the system. Number three, we need to make sure we know who it is we're voting, what we're voting for, and who we're voting for. And number four, we need to make sure we stay involved and hold those people's feet to the fire when they're not doing our will. Mm-hmm. The American people need to rise back up and take control of their government, because if they don't, this country is gonna fall apart.
How many people are in the lieutenant governor's race?
Seven. It's seven Republicans.
Okay.
In the race, in the primary. I don't know how many if any more are going to join into the primary, and I don't know if any are going to drop out. I do not know. But right now, it's a pretty healthy race.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be a debate?
I would imagine at some point there will be.
When is the actual voting taking place?
The vote will take place, for the primary will take place on March the 3rd. So we've got quite a while to go.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any feeling where you are in the rank?
I dare say that I'm number one. I'm thinking very confident. I'm either one or two. I really believe that. Our campaign just got started about a month ago, and we're doing very well. I've got a lot of supporters, and we've got a lot of momentum going into this next month. So I would dare say I'm either number one or number two.
Is the actual governor up for election as well?
He is. The governor is up for election. His name is Roy Cooper. He is a horrible, horrible, horrible Democrat, leftist. He announced his candidacy for his re-election bid. He announced it in New York City. Yeah. He's North Carolina's governor, but he announced his re-election campaign in New York City. He just vetoed our budget, which our budget is a fantastic budget. That includes raises across the board for all state employees, including teachers, a fantastic be that sixth and seventh raise in the last 10 years. It's a really good budget, and he vetoed it basically without even reading it. I mean, he received it, I think, on Friday and vetoed it shortly thereafter. He's horrible. He's got to go. The current lieutenant governor, his name is Dan Forrest. He is running for governor, and he's the guy that I'm behind 100% to make it through and take Roy Cooper out, and we're hoping to move in right behind him. Mm-hmm.
Does North Carolina have any sanctuary cities?
Yeah, we have places that claim to be sanctuary cities. That we have sheriffs that are not working with ICE, people that are complicit in this. This crime of sanctuary, giving sanctuary and aid to people who come to this country illegally. So yeah, we have people that are doing that in this state. We do.
Would that be a part of something? Your platform is to end all sanctuary cities there?
Absolutely, absolutely. Tom Tillis, one of our senators here, has introduced a bill. I don't know if you've heard about it, but he's introduced a bill in Washington that would make it so that family members of people who have been murdered by illegals can hold sanctuary cities accountable, sue them in court for allowing these people to stay in their jurisdictions. He's introduced that bill up in D.C. It's a bill I'm behind 100% because I think if you're going to allow criminals to roam freely in your city, you should be responsible for whatever action they take and whatever crimes they commit. You should be held 100% liable for whatever it is they do. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Absolutely. I'm sure in Kate Steinle case out in California, that should have been the case. That guy there, illegal immigrant, shot a gun. All he did is claim, hey, I don't know what a gun is. I had it, and I just dropped it, and it killed somebody. You know, that guy's suing the state now. He's going to end up getting paid. By the way, Mark, somebody wrote in and said they literally cried when they watched your speech for the first time. And he goes on to say, did you think your heartfelt thoughts would impact so many people?
I did not. Like I said before, I thought maybe a few of my Facebook friends would see it and say, hey, that was a great speech you did there. I had no idea what it would turn into. None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. We are when I look at the Democrat Party, it looks like a clown show to me, Mark. Is anybody up there you think able to beat Trump?
No. Not unless Donald Trump does something really stupid.
Well,
he'll have to do something. He'll have to make some colossal blunder. Something will have to go horribly wrong in order for him to in order for one of those guys to beat him.
Mm-hmm. When he called Elijah Cummings out for his rat-infested city, he was immediately called a racist. Do you think that card is being overplayed? Do you need to take care of some business there, Mark?
No, I'm good. Sorry, I just had to read something.
Okay.
Hold on just a second.
Sure.
I'm sorry, I was telling him how to open the gas tank. Okay, yeah. You know, here it is, Daniel. I'm a big believer. I've got a phrase that I like to use. When coming along, we had a phrase that they used to say, reading is fundamental. Okay, you know, reading is fundamental. I like to add to that and say, reading is fundamental, but comprehension is essential. We have a reading comprehension problem in this country. People don't read and define the words anymore. They read and they feel the words instead of defining them. When he said what he said about Elijah Cummings, it was nothing but the truth. And thank God that there are people in Baltimore that are standing up and saying it is true, that this man has not fulfilled his mission to the people that he was elected to fulfill the mission to. He has not done what he's supposed to do. It's the same thing with the so-called squad. When Trump made his tweet, he said they should go back to the broken places that they came from, fix them, and then come back and show us how it's done. And no place in there did I hear anything about a sex, race, color, or religion. Yet the news media says that these things, what he said was racist simply because he told somebody to go back where they came from and fix the broken places that they came from. Mm-hmm. Didn't mention where, didn't mention who, didn't mention any color or sex. But for some reason, they draw that out of what he said because they have poor reading comprehension skills. It's just the same old leftist playbook. When nothing else sticks, throw out the race card, you know? When you're losing the argument, throw out the bigot card. Try to discredit somebody by calling them a disgusting name.
Mm-hmm.
We know, people with common sense, we understand it's not true. But unfortunately, the news media is preaching that gospel to people, and a lot of people are falling for it. We can counteract that by not adhering to that, and when we hear it, standing up against it.
Mm-hmm. I read that in the 3 days after he said that, the news had called Trump a racist 1,100 times.
Yep. I absolutely believe it, and it's absolutely a false narrative. Mm-hmm. And what's funny about it is when you nail people down on it and really question them about it, the only thing they can say to you is, oh, you know what he meant. I mean, guys, I know exactly what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said exactly what he said. Why people don't understand that is beyond me. You know, everybody thinks this is a thing about racism and sexism. It's not. It's about the poor attitudes of many of the people that are in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
That go to Washington, D.C., and instead of doing the job that they were elected to do to support the people and work for the people who elected them, they're going to Washington trying to impeach Donald Trump for something that he didn't do. They need to shut up and get back to work. And that's basically what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up and get back to work doing what you're supposed to be doing instead of screaming at me all the time about while I'm doing my job.
Well, Mark, what you're saying there goes perfectly to what we just said a few minutes ago. I could say that about Californians. You're destroying that beautiful state with your liberal crap. Then they're milling out across the United States. You know, they say it costs more to get a U-Haul in California than it is in Texas because none of the U-Hauls are coming back to California. So,
you know, I don't doubt that.
And you can say that about the illegal immigrants. Go back to Venezuela, get rid of your socialism, fix your country, and then come back up here and tell us how to do it. Same with Californians. Go back San Francisco, quit worrying about straws and poop apps, and fix your state.
That's right.
And you know, these tent cities, is that something supposed to be normal? I mean, what's that all about?
It's not. It's just, like I said, it's a perfect example of what socialists want. Socialists want to create a society where they're on top and everybody else is just down in the trenches, struggling to survive. Hold on just a second.
Sure.
Just pull up right here, because I'm going to go in there when I get done here. Just struggling to survive, and it's not right. I mean, we can see it. I mean, we don't even have to go to Venezuela anymore to see it. We can see it right here in our own country, how these guys are pushing these agendas that are destroying citizens and destroying cities and destroying those people, the people in the city, destroying their lives, running them away from their hometowns.
Right. And, you know, my heart cries out for people that have to live in those situations. But, you know, you have the Baltimore Sun that said, it's better to live with a few rats than to be a rat. Well, I got a feeling nobody in the Baltimore Sun is living in the areas where there's rats running around the neighborhood and in their house and in their backyard. I got a feeling they're living in affluent areas and they're making statements like, it's not okay for people to live with rats. They would rather, the equivocation is that if we can call Trump a rat, that's better than getting somebody out of poverty. I don't see how that's even a justification for that kind of nonsense.
It's exactly right. Again, it points to who the real racists are. Anybody that would make a statement like that, they're obviously showing their elitism, their racism. You know, it's fine for these people to live down here with these rats. Now, I'm not going to live with them. I hope you don't expect me to go down there and live with those rats. But those people over there, it's just fine for them. That's something I've seen out of the left for many, 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 many years. It's hypocrisy of how they think that it's okay for people in the inner cities to have to live with gangs and violence and drugs and all those things. And they'll stand up for policies that make those things possible while they live on the other side of town in complete security and wealth and have everything they need. But they stand up for policies that will destroy other people's lives.
Yeah. Well, Maxine Waters lives in a gated community away from her district. Nancy Pelosi lives in a gated community away from her district. I mean, these people, it's exactly right. Mark, I kind of was going over this in my mind. Is this how this rolls, that inner city people stuck in poverty and for now, you know, trash and these kinds of things and rats, the Democrats come and they say, hey, look what the Republicans have done to you. Vote for me, and I'll go to Washington and fix it. And it's a circular thing. And every election cycle, they come back. Well, look, the Republicans haven't fixed this. Vote for me, and I'll go up there and fix it. And meanwhile, they're getting rich. You have Maxine Waters paying her daughter $750,000 a year for office work. You got Joe Biden's son, who got $1.5 billion contract to build houses in Iraq. You have Harry Reid, who tried to steal land in Nevada to give to his son to sell to the Chinese for solar panels, and that got caught. He got caught on that. I mean, and then all these people, and you got Bernie Sanders, the ultimate socialist, with three houses.
Right. You know, I don't even have to go that far out. I have people right in my local municipality that are traditionally have been race baiters and have played the race card to the hilt in our local government. And at the same time, while they're playing these race cards and claiming that everybody else is a racist, this guy is one of the biggest slumlords in Greensboro. I mean, a terrible slumlord, responsible for having people of his own color living in squalor in places and charging them exorbitant amounts of rent. So we see that hypocrisy from the top to the bottom. And it's time. I'm glad we have a president that's calling it out. I'm glad he's calling out. He's not afraid to call it out. And he's not backing off of it.
Well, you know,
it's the absolute truth.
Well, Trump is a master at pointing out the obvious. I mean, obviously you did that, and it worked at that city council meeting. You pointed out the obvious, and it's really made a difference in so many people's lives. Trump is pointing out the obvious that these Democrat-led cities have been this way forever. I'm thinking, why does it have to be like that? We've poured billions and billions of dollars in there. Are people skimming off the top? Is there payoffs, backroom deals? What's going on with all that money?
I couldn't tell you what's happening with the money, but the problem is not necessarily just the money. The problem is our elected officials are not taking their rightful role to inspire people in the right ways. They're just simply not doing it. They're supporting policies that are destroying neighborhoods. They're supporting policies that instead of making people strong and independent, it's making them weak and dependent. And the symptoms are showing up all around. Mm-hmm. We need to have people in office that are going to inspire people to be the best that they can be. One of the things that really, really, really irritated me about the debates the other night was when this clown, Mayor Pete, was talking about the minimum wage. I am tired of politicians talking about minimum wage. Why are you talking about minimum? You know, if we pay people $100 an hour to make the minimum wage $100 an hour, it's still going to be the minimum. You're still going to be at the bottom of the pay scale. Our elected officials need to be focusing on the maximum and getting people to understand that you need to strive for the maximum. And then on top of that, they need to be making ways to get to the maximum. They need to be making sure that there's industries and businesses in those towns that people can move into and move out of minimum wage jobs and move into making the maximum amount of money that they can make, mm-hmm. being able to maximize their potential instead of just trying to placate them by raising the minimum. Mm-hmm. It's very irritating. It's very paternal in nature. It's almost like, you know, I don't think you can do any better than minimum wage, so here, let me add a few dollars to it. No. We don't need to be doing that. We need to be teaching, showing people that you could raise yourself out of minimum wage status. And not only that, we need to be backing that up by being able to have industry and businesses in our communities where people can take advantage and make more than minimum wage.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got that Yang guy in that crowd who says he wants to give everybody free money.
Yeah, just an idiot. He thinks money falls out of the sky. He's one of these people that thinks money grows on trees because it's made out of paper.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think, Mark, will happen if the Democrats have their way and start giving illegal immigrants Cadillac health care? You think it might inspire, like, the whole continent of South America to come up here?
Well, the first thing it's going to do is going to bankrupt this nation. That'll be the first thing it's going to do. The second thing it's going to do is, yes, it's going to inspire more people to break the law to sneak in here. So it absolutely will. And like I said, we cannot let that happen.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, three or four of them said that the earth is going to end in 12 years. So I'm thinking, hey, why don't they go ahead and send me their paychecks? Because they don't need that money. They won't even be here.
They don't need that. Right. They don't need that money. They might as well just quit and go join a commune. Because, I mean, what's the point? If it's all going to come to an end in 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, they don't need their houses or anything. I'm just saying, hey, just give it all over. And, you know, if they want the rich to pay more, what's stopping all these Democrat candidates from just sending checks to the IRS? I think the IRS would gladly accept it, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Bill de Blasio is going to tax the hell out of the rich. He's also going to put a hell of a lot of working people out of work.
You know, a couple of years ago, when President Obama was giving a speech, Joe Wilson yelled at him and said, "You lied." Do you remember? Do you know what he was saying? You lie about? Obama
he was talking about the health care, right?
He was talking about giving health care to illegals.
He said
he wasn't going to do it, and Joe Wilson said, "You lie." And of course, Joe Wilson was roundly referred to as a racist.
Right. Because
every time you tell the truth,
called him a liar.
And see, this is the thing about Trump. When he speaks the obvious, when he speaks the truth, he spoke the truth about rats in Baltimore. Do you know that Orkin put Baltimore in the top 10 rattiest cities?
Yes.
2 years ago, the mayor of Baltimore said, "We can smell the rats."
PBS
did a special on the rats of Baltimore. And all Trump did was just say, "Hey, there's rats in Baltimore." But what happens is, immediately, the left comes up, and he's got them defending rats. This is how sick it is. Doesn't matter what Trump says. That doesn't make any sense. That just shows their true intent is not going to fix anybody's problem. They're not going to fix those inner cities.
Right. They're not. And they don't want to fix those inner cities. They want those places to stay just like they are, because what they want across the board is they want to be a ruling class elite while the rest of us suffer at the bottom in misery. That's their ultimate goal. That is their ultimate goal. They want to have all the cards. They want to have all the money. They want to have all the guns. They want to have all the possession in their camp. And they want the rest of us to just be scrambling to survive.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark, in your platform, running lieutenant governor, what are the three top things that you would try to legislate or get passed or lead in to change in your state?
Okay, the number one thing is I'm pro-life. We just had our governor vetoed what we call the Born Alive Bill, a bill that said if a child survived an abortion, we'd have to give that child medical care. He vetoed that. So that would be the number one thing that I'd be pushing for is for the pro-life agenda. Number two would be, of course, education. That's part of the role of the lieutenant governor. The thing that I'm most passionate about in that is I think we need to take all the social engineering programs out of our schools. We need to remove all that junk, all of it, Common Core, from Common Core to all the teaching about, you know, homosexuality and all this wild sex education garbage. It all needs to go. All of it needs to be wiped out of our schools. We need to get back to the basics of reading, writing, and mathematics to be able to teach our children how to think instead of teaching them what to think and stop indoctrinating. And then number three would be standing up for law enforcement, including making sheriffs work with ICE to take care of the problems that we have in our nation and in our state with people coming here illegally. So those are the three things that I would like to stand up for more than anything. Mm-hmm. Of course, standing up as well for economic development, which our legislature here has done a fantastic job over the last 10 years of turning the economy of North Carolina around. I'd love to be right there with them to continue to push that as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, those are good stances. Now, you mentioned the indoctrination of kids, of course, in California. Back to them. They talk about they're teaching in schools that boys are not boys and girls are not girls, and I don't know what date they set in their life to determine that. I think they try to make it fluid. But are you concerned that you would be labeled a homophobe by saying you don't want transgender studies or LGBTQ TRBR9 studies in schools?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody will say that, and then what I say that is bring it on. Because I'm not afraid of transgender people. I don't live in fear of transgender people. I don't know what being transphobic means. My only problem is this, you know, that has no place in the classroom at all. Period. I don't believe sex education has any place in a classroom. None. Particularly elementary school, junior high school. It doesn't have any place there at all. It's not the school's job to teach children about those issues. If parents want to talk to their children about those things, fine. There's materials out there where they can talk to their children at home about it. But at a school, there's no reason for that. We should be allowing these children to be children, grow up as children, and be educating them. Like I said, not indoctrinating them, trying to teach them about serious adult issues and homosexuality. I'm sorry, homosexuality is an adult-only issue. Mm-hmm. Homosexuality is something that should be committed by two consenting adults. It doesn't have anything to do with children. Last time I checked, it's illegal for children to have sex, and they're not supposed to be. They shouldn't have anything to do with homosexuality. And if somebody needs to explain something to them about homosexuality, it needs to be done at home. Mm-hmm. It's not, our schools are not the place for that. So if people want to call me a homophobe but just having common sense and saying children need to be left out of adult situations, let them have at it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's definitely bold on your part there, and I admire that there. And I think a lot of ways the inspiration that you give people for just standing up for what's right, because in this country, like I said earlier, if you stand up for what's right, then the names are coming out. Homophobe,
oh, yeah.
Racist, xenophobe, all kind of phobes, you know, who knows what. Thing you know, to be necrophilia phobe because you don't like people having sex with dead people, you know. So
exactly.
It's like, and you're right. That is an argument that is brought out to end the conversation. And speaking of ending conversations, YouTube and Twitter and Facebook are all trying to end conversations. I don't know if you're aware that Kelsey Gabbard, after the first debate, was highly Googled and her ads were just deleted. And
yeah.
She sued Google
yeah.
now for $50 million. She started to make a difference, and she's not one of the chosen ones. Have you been doxxed or shadow banned or deleted or demonetized or anything like that since you've been running?
Not yet. No, not yet. But I suspect
your time's coming,
maybe.
Brother.
Yeah, I suspect at some point, maybe.
And, of course, if that happens, you're going to stand up to them, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
A lot of people I know have been, their channels have been wiped out. A lot of my content's been demonetized, but I never look to make money off of them anyway. I just seek to get the truth out, which is one of the reasons I'm having you on the program, and I really appreciate you coming on. So you said there's nobody right now in the Democrat field that could take on Trump. Is there anybody out there that isn't running? Some people are saying perhaps Michelle Obama should jump into the race.
Yeah, I'm really seriously thinking that maybe at some point she might. But as of right now, the clowns that they have out there right now, they're pitiful. They're pitiful. And it's really sad. We had two nights of just straight garbage. I mean, that's the only way you could describe it. It was straight lunacy. Just garbage. I just can't believe that what's coming out of these people's mouths. I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to be who's ever going to the left the fastest. Speaking of race cards, the squad called Nancy Pelosi a racist. So like that word has no meaning whatsoever.
None. It doesn't. And it's, like I said, it's just right now what it is just a way to stigmatize somebody, to hit somebody upside the head, to try to make them ashamed, try to shut them up. Mm-hmm. What we got to start doing is we got to start fighting our way through it and start standing up to it the same way President Trump does.
Mm-hmm. If somebody in their local community is having, say, a tranny story time coming to their library, what do you recommend that they should do?
Not go.
Well, I wouldn't
go. There's not too much you can do to really stop it if the library is promoting it. But you can tell your friends, you can tell your neighbors, don't go. Mm-hmm. And when I say don't go, that means don't go back to the library. Just stay out of the library, period.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do something with some books, get some books at home, order some books from some company or something. Mm-hmm. And then go to the library and tell them, I'm not coming back to this library because you all promoting filth to these children. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
A drag queen is something that only should be something to be around adults. There's absolutely no reason whatsoever to promote that to children other than the fact that you are a pervert trying to pervert children's minds, period. Mm-hmm. And anybody with any good common sense can say that. You want to be a drag queen at a nightclub with grown-up men and grown-up men and women, that's fine. But once you start bringing it towards children, you have officially become a pervert. Now, because you are trying to pervert the minds of children, it's not okay. It's not something we need to accept. We need to stand up and say that. I don't understand why people are afraid to stand up and say that.
Mm-hmm. Ehan Omar, who many outlets claim married her brother to get him into the country, every time she is criticized, say, for instance, when she said 9/11, something happened and something happened to some people there, anytime she's criticized, they say people are racist and they are religious bigots. Yet we have on the national stage of the Democrat debate Booty Edge saying Christian Republicans are at fault, and he starts quoting scripture. How is it that his religious bigotry against Christians is allowed to be coddled and basically legalized in the public conversation?
Because they're hypocrites. Bottom line, they're hypocrites. There's no other way to describe it. They are total and complete hypocrites. They say and do exactly the opposite of what they claim to believe. Bottom line, they're just flat out hypocrites. They're hypocrites. They're either being hypocritical or they're lying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, he needs to call me up because there's a few scriptures that I could quote right to him, right to his face.
But the thing is,
what do you think his angle is of naming a religion in a national stage like that?
Oh, because he can get away with it. He can get away with that. The media will allow him to get away with it. Popular culture will allow him to get away with it. Now, popular culture wouldn't allow anybody to stand and say the same thing about Islam.
Right,
but he could say that about Christianity on the national stage because popular culture will let him get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, here in Indiana, I think people should thank us for providing Mike Pence, but on the other hand, we got to apologize for providing Peter Buttigieg on the national stage. I mean, to me, it's an embarrassment. Of course, the Google and them like him. And Hollywood likes him, so they're funneling money. But I don't know, when are some of these guys going to start peeling off? I know that Swallowell guy got ejected. I mean, when are we going to start peeling these Democrats out of the clown car?
I have no idea. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what the end game is on all this. It's just nuts right now. It really is. It's crazy. I can't get over the fact that there's so many of them in the race and they're not looking at it going, you know, guys, this is ridiculous. We need to pick somebody decent and or somebody that we think can win and run with them. I'm not really sure what the plan is right now. It just seems like disorganized chaos. Mm-hmm.
All right, but you say there's nobody in the Democrat field that will run that can run against him. But you say that Michelle Obama may come in the race.
I don't know if she will or not, but it certainly seems like she may. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rumors are out there, but I don't know. I honestly, at this point, I have no idea what's going to happen. I really don't. And I don't know what these guys are planning on.
What do you think about that, Marianne Williamson? She's going to meet Trump on the battlefield of love.
Oh, I think she needs to lay off the meds. That lady is, I don't think I've ever heard anybody more bizarre on a debate platform than that lady. That lady is, I really just don't even know what to say about her. Yeah. She's just a symptom of that Democratic problem of just being completely, you know, like completely disconnected from reality. Just completely disconnected from reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, she says there's a dark psychic force, man. It's just she's going to have she's going to create a office of psychic battles or something. I don't know. By the way, several people in our chat, Mark, want to vote for you. Is there any way people around the country can cast votes in North Carolina?
If we were Democrats, we could do that. No, they can't vote for me, but you can definitely support me. Our campaign right now is we're building our campaign as a grassroots movement, and people that want to support us that don't live in North Carolina can definitely support me by sending in donations. And we definitely need donations. We're in a big push right now to reach our financial goals. We've got some momentum going, but we really need dollars. We need green soldiers to come in to help us march us to victory. So if people would go to my website, markrobinsonfornc.com, you can donate there. You can also find the address there to send in donations by snail mail, by mail. But, folks, we would appreciate every dollar helps. And like I said, we are looking for all the donations we can get right now because we need a war chest to be able to go to war against, to be able to fight this, fight through this primary. And we're definitely going to need a war chest to be able to get through the general election and get to Raleigh. Mm-hmm. So right now, that's the major way that people can help us. They can help us by donating whatever they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have a link to your website on our website there, too. By the way, this show will begin to replay directly after the show. We'll podcast it and put it in our TuneIn Radio playlist. But, Mark, I admire the way you stand up for what's right. I think we need more people to do that. You know, the Bible says, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. And you have done something. You took a stand, and it really brought you to some places you never dreamt of being. That, again, as I said in the first hour, that is a model for people that we need to start standing up for what's right. I don't think it's enough, really, just to put a Facebook meme out there. We need to get out into public and battle these people head on.
That's exactly right. That's the biggest lesson that I've learned out of all this, that nothing makes a difference like showing your face in the place. And what caps it off is when you make your voice heard, when you do show your face.
Mm-hmm. Has the city council ever asked you back to speak again?
As what?
Has that city council asked you back to speak?
No, they've never contacted me at all, no.
You're probably not likely to hear from them.
No, I'm pretty sure if I ever show up again, they're probably going back, oh, no, it's that guy again.
If
Yep.
That's funny. Is there any possibility that Donald Trump might ask you to be in his sphere, in his cabinet, or in his government?
I have no idea. If I got that call you'd probably hear me hollering from where you are. Yeah, if I got that call, yeah, that'd be fantastic. I would love that.
Mm. Now, have you ever met Diamond and Silk?
I have. As a matter of fact, I have an event coming up with them here in North Carolina in Watauga County on the 14th of this month. We will be at the Watauga County GOP event. It'll be Diamond and Silk will be there. I'll be there. Our current lieutenant governor, I believe, will be there. If I'm not mistaken, I believe he'll be there. It's going to be a fantastic time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an event, like I said, having an event coming up with them.
You know, and that's awesome, because there's nothing that decent people in this country want is for everyone, all races and religions, to get along. They're just people that capitalize and profit off of division. And they just don't ever let this country heal. They always pouring salt in the wounds. They're always causing division. It's like, you know, I'm sick of it, because, you know, people that have love in their hearts love everybody to begin with. And so when they try to create people that are unlovable because they're in a certain group, then that just, it just brings down the whole country, and I'm sick of it. I'm just praying for the day when we can not look at race and just look at people that are good and decent Americans trying to make this a better country. But there's just this part that won't let that happen, and I'm just sick of it.
I am as well. There are people that are fighting for this country, and there are people that are fighting against it. And the people that are fighting for it are the people I want to join with. It doesn't matter to me what they look like.
Mm-hmm. Somebody just wrote, Diana from our live chat said, just got here, love this guy. We'll watch the replay.
all right.
You get more people to love you, you know. And really, it's because you speak the truth, and it's ringing into people's spirits. They know the truth. They know what, and we've had so much indecency that when we hear decency, it's like a refreshing shower. It's like, oh man, finally somebody talking sense. You know, that's why Trump got elected. And you know, we talk about how crazy Marianne Williams is. The only thing I like about her is she's not a politician. She's very entertaining, and a little bit almost like Trump. She's very entertaining. You never know what the hell she's going to say, but she's not going to win. But the thing of it is, I can't not take the politicians as they are. Those other 16 or 20 Democrats, they all sound alike. We're gonna help the inner city. We're gonna raise the taxes. We're gonna give health care. We're gonna do this. I've heard that for 50 years, and this is what we have, and they're doing it again. And Trump's saying that bullshit ain't working. It never has worked.
They
are fighting to keep it just like that and magnify the depravity and the horribleness of living conditions for millions of Americans. They don't care. It doesn't come into their radar.
That's right. It's not. And like I said, it's not for them. It's not in any way, shape, or form about improving anybody's lives but their own. That's the only lives they're concerned about. These politicians that preach that garbage are only concerned about improving their own lives. They're not concerned about improving the lives of the people who elected them to office.
Mm-hmm. Question come in. It says, what do you think about the getting rid of the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Patriot Act?
We're not even going to go into that, because we could be talking about that and the history of that all night long, and the ins and outs and the whys and the outcomes. Mm-hmm. That is not even something that's on my radar right now, because that's so far removed from what I'm doing, what I'm trying to do as lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. That would be something that would be the more of a federal issue. Mm-hmm. That would sit with people, with senators and congressmen, and folks like that. It's like I said, it's not even something on my radar. I certainly understand the ins and outs of it. I have studied the history of it quite extensively, but it's not something that I'd be willing to really comment about, because it's not really something that would be closely connected to my job.
Understandable there. Question come in. Says, Mark, what are your thoughts on reparations for Black Americans?
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. You're going to give money to people people that you say are owed money for work that they did not do. It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous concept. I'm going to say this, and I don't care who gets mad about it. If anybody owes any reparations, it's the Black people who are living and taking it and have been bequeathed the freedoms that they have now by the people who were slaves that fought to give them the freedoms that they have now. If anybody owes anything, it's us. Mm-hmm. We owe a debt of gratitude to the people that came before us that survived slavery and fought for a better day and gave up their lives so that we could have the freedoms that we have. Mm-hmm. And we have to repay that debt by being people that stand up on our own 2 feet and are not begging for money that we did not earn. We need to stand up. We need to build our own lives. We need to build our own families. We need to build our own communities. And that's how we pay the debt of gratitude that we owe to the people who gave us the freedoms that we have today. Mm-hmm. Begging for money we did not earn is a slap in the face of those people. We need to stand up and start being the people, that the kings and queens that they expected us to be.
Damn, you need to be elected. But you know, they're that's a wedge issue. If that, and they're talking about that, all that's going to do is make people angry. And the Democrats feed off of anger. They're the angriest people I ever seen. I've seen Cory Booker screaming with his bug eyes. I saw Bernie Sanders. He was screaming the whole night long. Somebody said, "Chill out," you know. And then that Elizabeth Warren, she's angry. I mean, jeez, man. I was like, I was getting tired just looking at that. Why are these people so angry? Mark, can you address why Democrats are so angry?
They're angry because we have a president that's standing up for the United States of America. That's why they're angry. They're angry because they see things in this country are finally going right for Americans, and they are furious. They are furious that their cabal is being turned upside down, and they are starting to rage. It's really sad. It's really sad. People like Cory Booker, you can see the lunacy coming out of this guy. Bernie Sanders, you can see it coming out of him. Nancy Pelosi, although I think she keeps her crazy slightly medicated, you can see it coming out of her. These people are angry because they see the apple cart that they've had in place for so long. They see it being upset, mm-hmm. and they're angry about it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that Nadler, he's angry too, and everybody's trying to impeach the president are angry. You know, the things that Trump has got done by himself with all these forces arrayed against him, can you imagine what would happen if the Democrats actually loved America and wanted
exactly.
to make America better?
That's exactly right. It would be fantastic. It would be fantastic. Unfortunately, these folks do not love America and do not intend to do anything decent for this country.
Well, none of them have my vote. By the way, I got a picture of my background. Who's that? I don't know if it's on your left or right. In the uniform.
Oh, that is me at Fort Sam Houston. That's me over on the far left facing. The fella in the middle, his name is Esteban Lopez, and the fella on the opposite side over there, his name is Brett Lilly. Brett Lilly was from Minnesota. Esteban Lopez was from Brownsville, Texas. And then, of course, there's me. I was from, mm-hmm. you know, from Greensboro. We mm-hmm. were best of friends through basic training and AIT. We met at Fort Bliss, Texas, went through basic training together, and then we moved on to Fort Sam Houston and went through a 91-8-10 school, medical specialist school there at Fort Sam Houston. Mm. We were like brothers, man. It was great. I wish I could see those guys again.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, somewhere along the radar, you must come up in their purview. Hopefully they'll Facebook friend you or something, but thank you for your service.
Yes, sir.
What do you think about maybe a mandatory service for young people?
I think that would be a fantastic idea. I think that there are, and I tell people this all the time, we sell our young people short. I know in the 1920s, they called the children of the 1920s the lost generation. And it was why they said that if anything ever happened in this country, that, you know, that generation wouldn't be able to handle it. Well, that was the generation that went on to become the greatest generation, fought World War II. I mean, those guys stepped up in a big way, and I'm sure there were a lot of people, a lot of young people during that time that people looked at and said, oh, he's just a silly little stupid kid. Went and fought in combat, you know, landed on D-Day, you know, went up Point du Hoc, fought the Battle of the Bulge, you know, fought at many places of World War II, fought at Iwo Jima and places like that. So we can't sell our young people short. I really believe there are a lot of diamonds in the rough out there. A lot of these young kids out here that are quiet and being ignored, they're going to grow up to be the future leaders of this country. They're going to stand up and do the right thing to keep this republic going. They're just not being seen right now because they're being overshadowed by the loudmouths and the knuckleheads. Mm-hmm. Those loudmouths and knuckleheads will be shoved aside eventually, and the good ones will rise to the top. And I think we're going to be surprised at what we see out of them. Mm-hmm.
Do you think Anti-Fall should be labeled a terrorist organization?
Absolutely. It was a terrorist organization when it was in Europe. It was responsible for many, many, many terrorist bombings, many, many, many political assassinations. It should have been labeled a terrorist organization without even being established here. And the moment it reared its head and the folks start showing up in mass, they should have been eliminated.
Mm-hmm. There are the people now throwing shakes at police officers, and the shakes have concrete in them. You know, I think anytime a police officer is attacked, the full weight of whatever penalty is out there should be weighed against them. There needs to be a definitive, solid answer to anyone who assaults a police officer.
Right. It's, what's going on right now with that is, I'm telling you, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. It's what I call a doorstep issue. People look at it from afar and see it just as a problem for police officers. But it, if it continues, it will be coming to your doorstep soon, because if people will assault police officers like that because they don't like police officers, what do you think they'll do to you if they don't like you?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a badge and gun. What do you think that they'll do to you? Mm-hmm. You don't have the authority of the city behind you, the written authority of the city behind you. What do you think they'll start doing to folks they don't like, just ordinary citizens? Mm-hmm. It's a doorstep issue, and I'm telling you, it's going to start showing up at people's doorstep. I, for one, I am completely 100% ready.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can say this, and I've said this on the program several times, that if the Democrats take control of the government totally, they're not going to just institute laws. They're going to have they're going to be vindictive against Trump supporters, Christians,
yep,
people with more. They're not just going to say, we're going to pass this law, that law, help this and help that. They're going to say, these people, they're going to label us as terrorist organizations. They are so vindictive and so hateful. They want revenge. These people get in power, it's going to be unbelievable what kind of things they can pass. Look, if they can pass a law that when a baby comes out, that you can decide to kill it after it's out, there is nothing that they won't do. You can't say it's ridiculous to say that they're going to put people in jail that disagree with them. They've already said that it should be a crime to make a meme of or make fun of congressional people. They've already said
right.
That.
Yeah, they have already said that, and I'm telling you, another thing that's very scary, is the way that they're allowing these children to be in with this whole homosexual issue. It blows my mind to turn on the TV and go on the internet and go on social media and see these children being connected with these grown men in these sexual situations, dancing for grown men and things like that, being promoted on morning television shows. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, people have got to realize that this is going in the wrong, not call for it to stop.
Mm-hmm. A question come in for you says, do you think there are enough people with enough ambition to restore the republic?
Yes. Yes, they just haven't been awakened yet.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe there are people out there that if you hear the message and can get inspired and will come along and will help to do this. I really believe it. I truly believe it.
Mm-hmm. The question come in says, what are the top two or three things blacks can do to improve their situation in America?
The top thing that they can do, I don't know about the top two or three things, but the top thing that I think black Americans can do to improve their situation as a whole, we can do one or two. Number one thing they can do is we need to get back to being families again. We need to stop embracing. Having children out of wedlock, just willy nilly, and not caring about it. We need to get back to having fathers in the home. We need to get back to having married couples in the home raising children together, as parents, as husband and wives. That's number one. Number two, we need to ditch the victim mentality. It needs to go out the window. We are not victims. You will never be a victor if you think of yourself as a victim. You have got to think of yourself as being victorious. And as far as I'm concerned, we were victorious the moment we freed ourselves from the bondage of slavery, and we have all the opportunities that are available to us in this country. We need to take advantage of it from a standpoint of being victors and not victims. And number three, we need to start embracing law and order in our communities. We need to start seeing the police officers as useful in our community, and instead of seeing them as enemies, which is what the media and these Democrats want to see them as, we need to embrace them so that they can do the job that they need to do to start keeping our communities safe and our families safe in their homes. So I would say those are the three things that need to be done.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Bible says we are more than conquerors through Christ Jesus. And it tells me that if we have God in our lives, that's also going to help us to be victors in this life as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got to start seeing ourselves as victims instead of victims.
And speaking of that, in the spiritual end of it, Mark, do you feel in any way, from a spiritual perspective, that you have been called or tapped on the shoulder and said, you know, that God's saying, Mark, I want you to go out there and speak? Have you felt anything like that, any kind of connection or anything like that?
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think this is simply a secular thing or a political thing. I think it's got a lot to do with faith and being obedient. I really do.
So then in some respects you were chosen for the journey that you're on.
Yeah. I don't think that I was made the way I was made to build furniture. I'll just put it that way. I don't think that God put what he put in me so I could go to a furniture plant and build furniture. Although, you know, building furniture and working in manufacturing, that's how I fed my family for many years. But ultimately, I don't think that my destiny was to work in furniture manufacturing. Mm-hmm. My destiny is what I'm doing now.
So the best place you can be is in the center of God's will, and you feel like you're in that center?
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%.
Very good. And I think somebody out there maybe watched the program may be wondering if they're in the center of God's will. Now, did anything come to you as a premonition, a prophecy, a feeling, an unction that you like? Some people say they feel a calling. Did you ever feel that?
I'll tell that by telling this story. Years ago, when I was in the ninth grade, our city had something called the. It was like a citywide speech contest, okay? Mm-hmm. And the way the contest was formulated was that all of the ninth grade junior high students across the city in a certain level of English, and I was at the highest level of English, we all had to do a speech in class and be graded on that speech.
Mm-hmm.
The top people from each class were chosen to go on to compete at the school level. The top people at the school level were chosen to go on to the city level. Well, there were many people in my class, and I'm not ashamed to say this. When I was in school, in junior high school, I was somewhat of a slacker. I was a guy that, you know, just I barely did enough to get by, you know. And so when this whole thing was coming up with the speech contest, there were people all around me that were practicing their speech and, you know, trying to make it to the school level and going to the library every day to practice their speech and practice and practice and practice. I wrote my speech the night before I was supposed to deliver it on some index cards that I hastily got my mom to go to Eckerd's drugstore to buy. I bought these things, bought them home, and I hastily wrote out this speech, and I did my speech about fighting crime, oddly enough. Taking a bite out of crime, which is the slogan back then. So I wrote the speech. I didn't even read over the thing. I just said, well, I'm going to write this. I'm going to get up tomorrow, read this thing, and get my C, and that's going to be it. You know? So the next day I come to school, and they call my name, and I have to get up, and I got up, and I delivered my speech. And as I'm delivering my speech, I'm thinking, yeah, this will get me a C at least. And I get finished with my speech, and I get this huge round of applause. And people were like, oh, my God, that was so good. That was so great. The teacher was like, that was fantastic. People were asking me how long I practiced, how long it took me to write this thing. And I told them, you know, guys, I wrote this thing last night. I didn't practice not once. But But to make a long story short, I ended up going to the school level. Then I ended up going to the city level, only to lose to the mayor's son. And everybody told me, said, you actually won that contest. The only reason why you won is because of the mayor's son. But my English teacher in that class, her name was Miss Lineberry. I'll never forget. She signed my yearbook that year. And she, when she signed my yearbook, she said, "You're a wonderful student. And I don't know what you're going to do in your future life, but whatever it is, it's going to involve public speaking." And she wrote that in my yearbook when I was in the ninth grade.
Wow.
And doggone if she wasn't telling the truth.
Wow.
She must have had the premonition.
Wow, what a story. Mark, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that, man.
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you what, we're getting near the end of the broadcast. Sir, tell us about your website and how people can help you in your campaign.
My website is markrobinsonfornc.com. Again, markrobinsonfornc.com. That's all spelled out, markrobinsonfornc.com. You can go there. You can volunteer. Sign up to volunteer. You can donate. And you can also buy T-shirts online. We're selling T-shirts as well online. As far as our campaign in North Carolina goes, we're ramping that up right now. We're signing up volunteers to get ready to take this thing into the next level. So, but like I said, our main focus right now is raising money, folks. We've got to have a war chest. We need those green soldiers. So please, if you can donate, we will take donations, take all we can. It's going to take them to be able to win this race, and we would truly appreciate your support in that area.
Well, that's the new Green Deal that I approve of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Mark Keith Robinson, I appreciate you coming on the Edge Television broadcast. Can we have you on again sometime?
Absolutely. All you got to do is give me a call. You're one of my favorites.
All right. Hey, that means something. All right, Mark, stay safe and tell your driver thanks so much for taking care of you now. Get you to your destination safe, too, as well.
All right. He's doing a great job. So, yes, sir.
All right. Good evening.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was Mark Keith Robinson, candidate for...